Hello and welcome to Down the Slope. I'm Ewan and we have 3 out of 4 airs tonight. Liam's currently on a flight home from London. So by powers of deduction, I'm left with Greg and Harry. Greg, how you doing, mate?
Roy Keane.
Okay, Harry, how you doing?
Mate, you can the rules. Hibs win, Harry's back in good spirits. There we go.
It was a strange one on Saturday, wasn't it? Like, the football does feel a bit of a sideshow now, doesn't it? Compared to the sort of other questions that are going on at the club. I think maybe this weekend they'll get the same treatment with obviously the sort of some chat that's came out in the last sort of 24 hours as well. That'll probably continue to rumble on over the next week. But hopefully we get some clarity in the next couple of weeks and then we can actually focus on football for the last couple of weeks of the season, because I don't know about you, but the game sort of snuck up on Saturday a wee bit almost. I know we spoke about it on Thursday night, Greg, but before you knew it, it was Saturday. You know, it'd been quite a whirlwind week, Harry, with obviously Maloney sacking and stuff.
That's the first time in my life I've heard the word, I think you said strange instead of eye bleeding, to describe the football at the weekend. I completely get what you're saying. Like, it wasn't because sometimes when things aren't going great, you dread games of football. It wasn't that type of feeling, but also wasn't like, oh yes, Hibs are playing today. It was kind of I'm watching it to watch it, but I'm not excited or dreading it. Like, I'm watching it because I'm a Hibs fan. I'm not watching it because I want to, essentially.
I have to be honest. I wasn't able to make the I didn't know on Saturday morning if I was going to be able to go to Paisley or if I wasn't going to be able to go to Paisley. I then didn't know on Saturday morning if I'd even get back to the flat to buy it and watch it. And until about, I made the decision to basically cut short what I was doing on Saturday so I could watch the game. But then it wasn't really until half an hour before kickoff I was definitely like, right, like it's football time. Like it really was a bit of a strange one. It'd been a really Hibs heavy week last week, Greg, obviously with the sort of we had 2 or 3 episodes we put out across the four of us. And well, the manager sacking as well. One change, Harry, obviously enforced in terms of Ryan Porteous dropping out. Melkerson came in, which meant your big mate James Scott kept his place, but I think more importantly it meant that David Gray went sort of back to a more classic looking 3-5-2 in terms of having Melkerson and Scott up front, and it looked like sort of Harry Clark slipped into sort of right centre back as well, didn't it, initially? No, am I talking nonsense again? No,
I think he was on left wing back. He was on the left initially.
What did you make of the selection? Did you expect Gray to make any more changes than he did?
I think, to be honest, David's head would have been on a stick if there was the exact same formation as usual. I'm glad he changed it, even though it didn't make too much of a difference before the game. I think if it was the exact same team that Maloney had played the whole time, I think people probably would have had quite a dig at Ron Gordon, because what's the point in sacking someone if you're just going to play the same football? Mm-hmm. In the end, the game was about getting 3 points and putting any types of relegation worries that weren't really there, but you know, it was always kind of lingering in the mind until you got those 3 points on the board, despite what certain hot dog eating reindeers will say. I had to get one in there. Sorry, lads. Sorry.
So to be honest, I always find it telling when a caretaker takes over and changes the formation and plays maybe 2 up top. I find that's sometimes telling. I said that last week on the pod that I wanted 2 up top. Whatever your thoughts are on James Scott, I think he's put a bit of effort in. He's trying and it's bare minimum, but he's doing that. I think we're much more of a threat with 2 up front. We can't just lump the ball up to James Scott or Melkerson expected to stick. That's bullshit. So we need to try and
It's playing the cards that like the hand that you're dealt, isn't it? Because neither of they two are really going to be able to play up front on their own. I don't think James Scott's got the mobility to to yeah. lead the line in terms of, because to play up front on your own, you really do have to be able to get all over the place. Melkerson but then Melkerson probably doesn't have the sort of physical attributes that James Scott does, that you also need, you know, you need to be quite a well-rounded player. Like, look at Kevin Nisbet. I think Kevin Nisbet is a very good example of a player that can lead the line on his own, but even him, we know he's much better when he's got someone up there with him. And I think you've seen at Hampden that Scott can kind of do it, but even if you take, for example, the score goal we scored against Hearts, James Scott plays a part in the build-up, but when we actually score, he's not in the box because he's not got that. He's just not got the opportunity to get there. So I think I'd expect to see them both play every game between now and the split, I'd think. I don't know about yous.
Yeah, I'd be the same. I thought that James Scott played up front as well in the semi-final. I thought he'd done okay. You know, he's quite physical, but he does need that proper striker just off him, and Melkerson, who adds a different dynamic to the strike force. So I'm all for that.
Yeah. The only challenge I've got to it is, like, he's nowhere I stand with James Scott. I'll give credit where it's due. He's not been terrible the last 2 weeks, and he's definitely probably put his two best performances in a Hibs shirt in. But I don't see the value in giving a random loan player that I don't think we're likely to sign permanently game time. Like, I know it's an old cliche, but we've not really got anything to play for. Why not give random youngsters a try? Like,
do you think now that we've got that win, we might see that?
I would hope so. Like, I don't think you throw in like seven players from the under 21s, but I'm trying to bleed in one or two. Yeah, like Delphier, like, there's no point in him. Apologies if I butchered his name. There's no point in him sitting on the bench week in, week out if we've not really got things to worry about. And same with like the boys that have been banging him in, O'Connor and Laidlaw. Like, I'm not saying they need to start every game, but having them on the bench and making sure they get half an hour in their legs of first team football, I think would be beneficial.
Yeah, especially if Christian Doyle doesn't appear to be fit still.
You know, getting these boys involved in the first team. Even if it is just 5-10 minutes here and there, if you get them in the squad, on the bench, you know, it's good experience for these guys. And look, I get what you're saying about James Scott, Harry, but I genuinely don't think we've got any other options at the moment. We are very, very limited. But I understand that you would like to see the youngsters come through, and I think every Hibs fan would.
I think there's definitely more benefit to... Because I had a good chat with Ryan that was on, obviously on the 100th episode. He was after the game on Saturday and was talking about how professional footballers, no matter what, should want to win every game. And yeah, they might be a little bit meaningless in terms of league position or whatever, in terms of the end prize at the end of it. But I think in this scenario, I think fans would be very willing to see a Josh O'Connor get a half hour of 45 minutes. Or a start, like, because you look at the subs that we sort of had to make at the end of the game. You obviously brought Muller and Jasper on. Now, had St Mirren scored when they hit the bar, we had nothing on the bench. And I'm not saying that a Josh O'Connor or an Ethan Laidlaw are even close to being able to come on and change a game. But I would much rather see them come on against, let's say, Livingston next week and effectively a dead rubber to probably see who will finish seventh. Than being into next season and being like, what can these guys do? You know, at least get a little, just at least get them a little bit of a sniff of it. I think Josh O'Connor obviously came on against Aberdeen when we were 3-1 down last month. So he's obviously made his debut. And as well, though, obviously they are going for a league. So they're obviously like the under 18s has to be their priority in terms of getting that trophy in the bag for them. But first team football is the ultimate goal. So I think they should be in and around the squad. And I would be surprised if they don't start to get sort of bled into the squad over the remaining four games. And look, obviously we want to win them all and it's not a case of taking them lightly, but I agree with what Harry's saying in terms of long-term value for Hibs. I'm not saying that I think James Scott probably is more ready for first team football than either of them right now. But we're going to get more value from them getting minutes than James Scott getting minutes. And that's not a criticism of Scott right now. I agree. I think he's probably had his best two games and he looked a little bit more confident, at least in the first half, I thought. I know he obviously had a shot that went well wide, but a couple of nice touches. I think he skinned the boy alive and then his shot got blocked. Like he looked a little bit more lively, which we hadn't really seen since his debut. But yeah, we're blabbing on here because absolutely fuck all started in the first half.
It's a bit of a cliche, but scoring goals is a good habit to get into.
Mm-hmm.
and Laidlaw and O'Connor and Young, I think have all been doing that for the development team. So, you know, I don't think there's anything stopping them getting games for the first team. You know, if you score goals at any level, I'm sure you can take it to the next level in terms of first team football. Ultimately, these guys want to be playing first team football for Hibs. So, you know, this is their chance, so to speak, because we've seen players like Josh Campbell sort of been around the club until they're 22, 23, and then getting a chance, and it's not really worked out for them either this season. So, you know, if you get them in as young as possible, get them around the first team, that's not going to do them any harm at all.
And one thing I'd add on as well is I think there's a right way to bleed young players into the team. I think that Ollie Shaw initially was a great example of when he was kind of brought on where there was no pressure on him. If he scored, amazing. If he didn't, like, it's fine. He's only young. And then the reliance that we built upon him, and as we kind of made him one of our like focal strikers, is where the problem lies. But if we can kind of get these guys in, if O'Connor or Laidlaw scores, they've got the hunger. Like, they're not going to want to drop out the first team. Like, they're going to want it. Yeah. And even though, obviously, over the summer, we ideally need to get a couple of strikers in, so they're not going to be in the near the top of the pecking order, but they'll have that hunger to try and be in and around the first team. And I think giving that to them at a young age is a massive thing, because if you look at some of the players that we kind of ruined over the years by relying on them too heavily, hopefully that's something we're moving on to. Because like Witherspoon, Ollie Shaw, off the top of my head, for example, even like Ross Caldwell, I know he didn't turn out to be the best footballer in the world, but after he scored a screamer at Hearts, we thought he was going to be the best thing since sliced bread. And then as soon as he got first team football, he kind of fell away. But yeah,
I think that's almost the issue with Melkerson as well.
Exactly.
Obviously, had that game at Motherwell, and now people are expecting that every week. It's not going to happen. He's a young lad. He's 19.
100%.
You know, the way that we were playing under Maloney was try to lump up to him and try to get it stick. It's not going to work. So that's why we need two strikers up front. You know, because I think he'll work well with that. But he does need time. People need to be patient with him. He's not a world beater. Or he wouldn't be at Hibs. So give him time, be patient with him, and I think he'll come good. It's just try to build a squad around him that harnesses those qualities that he's got.
Yeah. Right, but in fact, actually, no, one, while we're on the subject of playing players and build, Ewan Henderson, he obviously did score the goal. Now, I was going to mention Chris Cadden's injury there in the first half is really the only notable thing, and obviously that'll be a big blow for the end of the season. But if it is touch and go, just don't play him the rest of the season. You know what I mean? Like, don't risk it in longer term.
We've got enough injuries, and I don't know why we've got so many injuries. I've heard reports of Maloney's training being a bit poor in terms of it was almost just ticking over, which doesn't help anyone. So, yeah, we need to evaluate that, because we can't have as many injuries next season. It cripples the squad, and ultimately that's why we're in the position we're in.
But aye, Ewan Henderson, do you think we're going to get the best out of him with two strikers in front of him and him being more centre in the park as opposed to part of that sort of front three that Maloney was deploying? Now, obviously, he did sort of play that sort of left side of the three at Hampden, and he played pretty well, but he was much more centre in the game at the weekend, Harry, and even in the first half when Hibs did look like doing something in the first half, it sort of went through him. Do you think between now and the end of the season it's important that we sort of try and get as much minutes of football into Ewan Henderson and probably what looks like his best position?
100%. I think he's a player we kind of still need to experiment with. I don't think he's had as much concrete first-team football as he would have liked so far throughout his career. I think one thing that's really impressive about his game, I think his crossing's fantastic. That's like, I remember when he first joined, he put some really good balls in the box, and I thought, like, the main problem he's got...
I can't throw away that. Like, it looked, I don't think we scored from a corner, but we looked like...
I remember after the first three games, after he signed for Hibs, I said to my dad, he should have had about four assists already. It's not his fault the boys aren't finishing things. But the problem is, in Scotland, you can't be a winger unless you've got that like breakneck speed, which he doesn't have. So it's trying to find a way that he can, because as you say, he's very deadly in the middle of the park, but he needs to find ways to drift wide and get those dangerous balls in the box. So
He put a really good cross in the first half. I can't remember, and he did manage to find himself down at the byline on the right hand side. That surprise, surprise, not to go on the end of. We're not really talking about the game here. We're talking about just those sort of final four games of the season. But if we do sort of stick with that sort of 3-5-2 with wing backs and Henderson in the number 10, what does that mean for someone like Sylvester Jasper? Obviously, Chris Muller's maybe a bit different from that in the sense that he's permanent, but Jasper's a player that now he's been out of the team for a couple of weeks. You're like, does he get? We're not even playing that well, but you think, does he get back in? Is he a player that we would want to try and? I don't know what the money involved would be to keep, but like, if we're playing a 3-5-2, I don't see where Jasper fits into that 11.
I think that for me, going back to Ewan Henderson, he's good at driving for deeper areas. I like it when he does that. I thought he was good against Hearts of Hampden. In terms of Jasper, I think he's maybe better behind the front two because he's got zero end product in terms of crossing the ball in the box. Mm. However, I don't think he's got a future at Hibs, if I'm honest. I think, you know, sort of when he first came in, I thought, oh, he looks an exciting player, but yeah, I don't know. I just don't know if he's quite got it. So yeah, it's a difficult one because look, there's definitely something there, but I don't know if he's quite got the full package at the moment, and I don't think Hibs would spend money on someone that isn't quite there yet, unless he's brought in as sort of like a Melkerson project, but I really can't see that.
I think, being honest, he's kind of the opposite of Dre Wright in the sense that he hit the ground absolutely running and he's kind of fizzled out. Mm-hmm. I think if he'd started the way that he's played the last couple of times he's came on the pitch, I think Hibs fans would be absolutely have been on his back and would absolutely hate his time here. He's lucky that his first couple, maybe three games, he played really well and he was skinning players left and right, but I think he's just really struggled to maintain the pace that he set as soon as he joined. However, I know we'll come on to it in a bit, but he did have an assist that was ripped off him by poor finishing, essentially. and again, like, it's the type of thing that the likes of him and other midfielders this season can kind of be a bit frustrated at, as they should have more goal contributions because essentially the finishing at Hibs this year has been absolutely abysmal. So it is difficult for these creative players. Chris Cadden, for example, should have about 30 assists this season.
I do think with Cadden, definitely an element of it falls on himself.
Some of the time there's balls in the box are pretty bad to me.
You're right, Harry. I mean, for three quarters of the season, our finishing's been absolutely tatty. Let's be honest. I think we started the season well. We were scoring goals, you know, three away at Motherwell, three at home at Ross County.
McGuinness
and Nisbet and Boyle. You know what I mean? Deutsch started the season well as well. Two in his first two. I don't think he's scored since. Obviously, he's hardly featured as well. But I don't know. I think he has got two goals this season, and they were both in the opening two games of the season. In the second half, Ewan Henderson scores a good goal. I know we're sort of skipping about 25 minutes there, but that's because absolutely fuck all happened in that time. Good finish. Maybe a bit fortuitous in the way it brought to him, but we've just been speaking about finishing. Ultimately, he puts it in the back of the net. He deserved the win. I think if it'd been a draw, I don't think either team would have complained, but I think Stephen Robinson said after the game, St Mirren probably edged it, but I don't think so. I would say both teams we had two chances, they had one chance. We scored one, they scored nil. Hibs win 1-0.
They scored bar.
You know what I mean? When you factor in the Josh Campbell chance, it's an equally as good chance, if not better, than the one they hit the bar with. So if you just look at it on the bat, and I think in the first half, we had some almost pushing 75% possession, I believe it was in the first half.
It was a lot.
And again, I know we've seen if there was a half of football that typified Hibs in 2022, it was that half of football at Paisley on Saturday. 75% of the ball, Neil Bois on target. Harry, Ewan Henderson hit the back of the net.
I know. I'm happy for him because I think a couple of times this season he's kind of lacked that composure in front of goal, but he steadies himself and it's a really good finish. I don't think there's really much more. There's not really any dramas that go around it. The ball broke down well. He took a nice touch and smacked it in. Like, it's exactly what you want to see. I think he's the type of player that will get himself in a lot of those positions next year. I think with another midfielder that's happy to break through the lines, like a McGuinness coming back, I think those two would be absolute gravy together. But unfortunately, it's not.
Did they fit in the same team?
I think so. I think you can drop McGinnis slightly deeper and then have him kind of breaking through from midfield and then have Henderson breaking through from attacking midfield. I think it's definitely been done before and I think it works. Like the midfield we had under Lennon, I think that kind of worked well. But yeah, no, I think the problem for Ewan Henderson is the fact that he's not really got much around him that's helping. I think as soon as we get he would be the player at the current
probably should have had a couple of goals as well. Probably should have had a couple of goals to his name himself. I think he spoke about that after the game, but was it Livingston, Greg? I think he had a couple of really good chances. Yeah. Did he maybe hit the bar?
Was that that night?
Oh, I can't remember. I feel like he's definitely had a and he had a good chance at Arbroath as well. Livingston, I want to say, had two chances.
No, he didn't hit the bar, but it was one really good save for the keeper, and one of them he just put straight at the keeper when he's just going to put it anywhere. No, it was definitely against Livy. He had two good chances. Like
Campbell hit the bar against St Mirren. That's what it was the following week. So 3 points. I think we've tried to jazz up the game there. Do you have anything else to add to the game?
I like that Harry Clark was tenacious and set up the goal, and I like that Ewan Henderson's anticipated it and he's been composed. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Harry, do you want to talk about Josh Campbell's pass?
I was going to have to bring it up. Like I feel bad because I don't want to keep digging the boy out, and we've done it a few times on the pod, but that way the ball broke. If you weren't watching the game, lucky you, because the ball broke down. It was maybe 80 minutes in.
Was his first touch, not as any defence, but it was his first touch since coming on as a sub.
Yeah, and then he literally picked up the ball, and I think he had
Jasper on his right, Muller on the left.
Yeah. And then he literally just had to play maybe 20 yards in front of Muller, and it would have been clear daylight to run into. 3-on-2, and he literally booted it about 40 yards ahead of him, and it nearly went out for a goal kick. It is honestly the worst pass I've ever seen. And then we thought to ourselves, you know what, Josh, get your goal, redeem yourself. We'll all forget about the pass. And like, just put your foot through the ball. What was that?
I think he tried to
chip it into the top corner.
I think he's tried to... That side of the goal, so the way it's running on him, that side of the goal is open to just sort of slot it in that side. And there's an argument to say he almost hits it too well, in the sense that he hits it with his instep and he leathers it. You know, like it's a great connection and it only goes over the bar by about inches. But anywhere on that, the goalkeeper's in no, it's one of them. The goalie's like 8 yards out, you know, like the goalie's doing nothing. Anywhere, either side of the goalkeeper's a goal. And he goes to slot it near side there, doesn't he? But whips it over the bar. Literally, that whole side of the goal is open. You know, he could put bottom corner, middle of the goal, top of the goal. There's no way the keeper saves it. And he just whips it over the top of the bar, doesn't he?
I'm being honest, I disagree. I think he's tried to be fancy with the finish. I think the way the ball's connected with his foot, I think he's tried to like do a wee chip thing. And so nestles nicely into the top corner. And he's just kind of fluffed it. But the main thing is, he was part of the team that won 1-0 away, and he helped us get 3 points.
He's another one that should have more goals, though. Like, I know we can probably go through the team and say that this season, but this isn't a beating stick for Josh Campbell. It's a beating stick for everyone in the team. Joe Newell should have more goals this season of a couple of chances he'd had. Josh Campbell, off the top of my head, he's got one at St Mirren. He should have got another one at St Mirren at the weekend. When he hit the bar... Was it Motherwell or Livingston he hit the bar against? I think it was Motherwell actually hit the bar against. They definitely should have scored. They should have scored against Hearts. I think there's been a couple other ones, you know, like, and then before we even come on to the strikers, they should all have chances. You know, the Melker single, what should have been the Melker single against Dundee United, you know, like, so many players should have, and like you said, how many goals we probably should have had from set pieces this season in terms of pretty decent headed chances, not even hitting the target.
Like, you know, it's frustrating as well.
It genuinely seems like a total confidence issue, and I don't know if that's coming for the manager or what, but it seems like there's a genuine confidence issue. Josh Campbell's confidence has been shot to bits numerous times. I almost feel sorry for him because it's not happening, but you have to ask yourself, is he good enough to play for this club? But I think there's just a big confidence issue at the club. Need a manager to come in and galvanise the squad and get boys in.
They all need to end the season, don't they?
Yeah. So do we, though. We need to end the season because it's been fucking hopeless.
A couple of comments on that. I think on the finishing, I think a few of those goals you mentioned were quite significant in terms of our season. Like, if we score that one against Hearts, we scored the last minute winner and beat them. We score that one against Dundee United, we finished top six and go into the Hearts games with momentum. And Josh Campbell, I think, is another
victim.
Even
Melkerson in the Tynecastle at 1-0. It's a chance. It is a chance.
Okay.
Genuinely, do you know what? Right, we could honestly be here about 2 weeks.
I was making a different
about point. All the chances.
Sorry.
My different point was I think Josh Campbell kind of fell victim to a lack of squad as well and not being utilised properly after being bled in. I think that if after, was it the Ross County game? I think he should have been pulled out for about a month or two just to let him settle. But I think the fact that he got such a consistent run of games and got given that contract.
Injury, wasn't it? It's been Joe Newell's injury on the back end. Now, we all have differing opinions on these two players, but it was mentioned in the, I think it was the interview Patrick made, the article Patrick McPartland done, was it last week, about the volume of games that people have missed in our squad. Joe Newell got injured and missed a good chunk of the season there, from between sort of the end of January and then the Derby came back in. So maybe it was only 3 or 4 weeks, but it was sort of 6 or 7 games. We just got rid of Gogic and Hallberg. You had 2 central midfielders available to play. You know, that was the situation that we were in coming out the January window because Joe Newell got injured. Let me rephrase that. We put ourselves in a scenario by getting rid of Gogic and Hallberg and not replacing them, that if one got injured, you had two. You know, like that. So, no, and you're probably right, Harry. It's his first season in the first team squad. Josh Campbell in flashes has shown that he can be a useful player in this squad in specific games. I think we're all happy enough and would be honest enough to say that in games where we expect to dominate the ball and we're going to have to break a team down, is Josh Campbell the answer? Probably not. But in your games against a Celtic, a Rangers, a Hearts, an Aberdeen, where it's going to be a little bit more of a battle to try and sort of win that midfield, Josh Campbell can do a job. But playing him and Jake Doyle Hayes at home to St Mirren, it's just not going to happen for you, is it, in my opinion? And that got thrust upon us through, whether it be, like we spoke about last week, poor recruitment, poor just the squad just been very unbalanced, I think, throughout this season. Even when it has been a bit healthier, it's like you look at it and you think the striking department's never really felt, I don't think we've had Nisbet and Boyd both available all season. It's been a bit of a mess really this season. I'm sure we'll dissect it all fully in a couple of weeks' time at the end of the season. But look,
however, there is a reason we've gone through 2 managers this season.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that as well.
So, speaking of managers, since last week's 3 episodes, not a whole lot's changed. Nothing's changed. We've not got a manager, but in the last sort of, in the early hours of this morning, was it only Monday morning it sort of broke, or was it yesterday? Late yesterday evening?
Yesterday morning,
Roy Keane has been linked with it. So initially it started as Roy Keane spoke to his pal and said, what do you think about the Hibs job? And then that made its way into, was it the Irish press? And then as today's progressed, it seems like he might be, what was it? He was going to be persuaded to have a chat to Ben Kensel. And then there's an article, Harry, I think that you've seen, it's what, 7 o'clock on our Monday night in the last couple of hours, that suggests that may well be progressing.
Yeah, no, it's the Man United. You find it with like the big clubs like Man United and Liverpool that the fan media for them have actually got quite good sources, and they've quite heavily linked Roy Keane with the job. It's frustrating because I want to see Hibs everywhere, but it's Roy Keane on the verge of signing for new managerial contract. It's like, no, Roy Keane's coming to the Hibs, get it written down. I don't know how serious it is. I don't know if conversations have actually even been instigated. Mm-hmm. The frustrating thing is it's all literally media chat at the current moment in time. And unless anybody knows Roy Keane personally, we can't vouch for it. Or if Ben Kensel, mate of the podcast, wants to jump on and tell us for a matter of fact, that'd be cool. But I'll kick us off by saying I think that it makes a lot of sense. I think that since Neil Lennon left, we've not really had a strong figurehead or strong character that's properly led the club from the managerial position. I think that leadership's something that we've kind of lacked throughout. As much as David Gray and Darren McGregor are great role models, I don't think that they are like the archetype leader that we need to be vocal in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I think that Roy Keane kind of brings that characteristic that will put a very strong character back into the club. I think that he's kind of, I've seen someone today describe him as Neil Lennon on steroids. And something as well I think would be refreshing with Jack Ross and Sean Maloney and even Heckingbottom, it's been very modern football. Like it's all we need to press. I think Roy Keane's going to come in, look at the players we've got, and he's going to be like, if we need to punt the ball at the pitch, we'll do it. If we can pass the ball on the deck, we'll do it. I don't think he's going to be one-dimensional. And I think that'll be a massive thing. So yeah, I know a certain someone, you, and I'm sure we'll get your opinion on it soon. But Greg, talk to me about Roy Keane.
It is the dream, to be honest. I think what you get with Roy Keane is a certain set of standards that people need to follow. He demands everything. It's probably difficult because I don't know anyone in the Hibs squad that's at his level. So, but I think he would attract a good type of player. I think he would attract a good level of player. It is Roy Keane. Everyone loves to listen to his opinion. I just think it would be so refreshing to get a manager who demands so much and expects so much from his players at the club. I've not really had that feeling since Lennon, to be honest. Jack Ross seemed a bit of a holiday camp. Sean Maloney seemed weak. Heckingbottom was all about areas of the pitch and how we went about our business and passages of play or whatever, which I'm sure Roy Keane is also about, but Roy Keane will also demand no less than 100%. So, of course, he's had a bit of a tricky track record in terms of where he's managed. He's had three assistant roles since he last managed Ireland, Villa and Forest. So I think he's probably ready for that step back into management. And I think he would back himself to take that step up again into management again, because that's just the type of guy he is. He demands a lot from himself as well.
And Ewan, just before you jump in, I just want to say, I think in terms, obviously after retiring, Roy Keane's like world-renowned footballer, but I think in terms of his like personality and character, I think he's got a profile that he never had when he used to manage back in the day. So I think his pull for players, like with the work he's done with Sky Sports, etc., I think his pull for players will be even stronger than it was back in his Sunderland and Ipswich days, just because like you don't really think of Sky Sports, like he's kind of synonymous with like major football at the moment. Like you don't really, like if you hear Roy Keane, you think football, you know, like it's not one of those things that Roy Keane's just a, oh yeah, he was a class player. He's a class player and he's a funny ass pundit, you know, like I think he's got a proper profile. And even if he did get sacked by December, at least we'd get sound bites for life. That boy would be funny as. But Ewan, talk to us. I know you're a bit sceptical of the idea.
Yeah, right. So I think it ticks a lot of boxes. And you know, the more I think about it, probably the more I warm to the idea. I do feel like, because there's no getting away from it. The fact, if you can have someone like Roy Keane manage your football club, then I think most people would be happy with that. You know, like, and I think Greg makes a good point about sort of Lennon coming in, and you could probably say that when we appointed Lennon as well, you're a bit like, that's a surprise. Not in the sense of that he's been a bad manager. It was like, woof, like we're in the Championship and he's won the top flight up here and stuff like that. And I think from a commercial point of view, I think it would definitely tick the boxes. But there's a few concerns for me with Roy Keane in the sense that I don't know how much he would want the job. I think the early sounds are that, I'd like to say, oh, he's maybe been convinced to have a chat and stuff. Like, that's hardly the glowing sort of, I want someone to be at Hibs because they want to be at Hibs. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, that's maybe a little bit pie in the sky thinking that you're not going to have to convince someone, especially if they've got a certain profile. But I think Roy Keane's profile is very much because of his playing career and his punditry. And he very much, I still think, given his age, given his playing career, still resonates with most fans, and probably most fans even at our age and younger as well, because everyone loves his rants about Manchester United. Whether you're a Man U fan, you probably you probably love it because he demands what you want from them. And like, if you don't support Man U, you love it because he's tearing into them. But you know, Greg always coins the phrase like bare minimum stuff. Like, I think he very much does. That's the stuff I don't think you would doubt with that it would be tolerated if we didn't meet that. But I just have my concerns around the fact he's not managed for 10 years. His last managerial job was ultimately a failure at Ipswich. He maybe didn't do, you could argue it was almost like Sean Maloney at Hibs. He left them where they were when they came in. You know, he didn't really do anything. He done well at Sunderland, I think, in probably the first year to year and a half. Obviously, I think he took them over and they were in relegation trouble in the Championship, got them promoted, and then I think kept them up the first year in the Premiership, but then very much the wheels came off. But he was very heavily backed as well. And
when Ellis Short came in, it all changed. He didn't appreciate the way that Ellis Short spoke to him. He said that he was condescending, demeaning, whatever. And you know that Roy Keane's a very...
Yeah. I think I'm a bit of a football geek, so like I think we've spoken about him. I'm a Liverpool fan, right? So everyone will think, oh, Ewan doesn't like Roy Keane because he's... I think Roy Keane's class. Like, you know, like, I think he's...
Roy Keane ruined Ewan's childhood.
That's not even the case, because by the time he'd left Man U, I was like fucking seven or something, you know what I mean? So like, he really didn't, he? But like, his overlap interview stuff with Gary Neville was really good. And I think at that time he spoke a lot about wanting to get back into management, and he was obviously heavily linked with the Sunderland job. Then I want to say it was maybe on one of the post-game things with Sky, they sort of asked him the question about basically what happened at Sunderland, and for whatever reason they didn't agree on something. But he then done something just last week with Jamie Carragher, where he says he thinks he's finished with management. Now, again, he might have just been saying that because he didn't necessarily see where the opportunities were, you know? It's a difficult one. If appointed, people would get behind, but it certainly doesn't come without its risks. What I would ask the question of, if this was a manager and that was their CV, you had no idea who they were, you didn't have the name, you didn't know who the person was, if you'd just seen the managerial CV, not one else would want him.
But it's Roy Keane.
Aye, but the whole anti-balls thing comes to mind there, like...
There's no evidence of Roy Keane being a good football manager for 10 years. You know, like, there's really no... His last job, people will say you're only as good enough as your last game, as your last job. Well, he failed at his last job.
Right, well, what I think we should do, because I think it adds good context to it, because that is a valid point, fair point. I think we should go through some of the other candidates that are still being linked with the job and go through them, and then we can kind of circle back and see where we stand in terms of the other people.
Give me 5 minutes and I'll be driving down to Roy Keane's door begging him by the time we're through this list.
So just categorically going through them, I think we've went through Knutson, and it would feel an insult to go for Knutson without our lovely Liam being on the pod.
To be honest, I think we've absolutely ripped the arse out of Knutson, and obviously some of them has had an absolute meltdown as to why Knutson would not get the job. I think, what was it, a 12
tweets in bed.
And I've never seen unity in the Hibs support like it. Aye. Jumping on that and slating him.
Was that before or after our last recording?
I think it was after. No, I think it was just after. No,
was it after?
Tuesday just after. Tweeted the thread.
Oh, so we've recorded since.
Okay. So yeah, that was that
anyway.
Was
anyway,
highly amusing.
We'll move on from that, but I just want to say thanks very much for Sunday night entertainment, because I had a great time last night. I was just honestly, I was chuckling away at myself. But
I took an early night last night. I woke up to our two group chats were going fire. I was like, what the fuck? I had some good early entertainment this morning.
I certainly did not take an early night, and I read through absolutely everything before I went to my bed, which is probably why I'm shattered today.
Oh, Hibs have never been in a happier mood. But anyway, back to off Twitter. of reality and to real reality. Some of the names that have been linked, I'll throw them out and then just give me maybe a one-line summary of each. So one that's been heavily linked, I think a fair question, it's being touted as, if he wins 5 out of 5, should David Gray be given a chance? Because by that time, he's got over an 80% win ratio, obviously knows the club better than pretty much anybody else. What would your initial impression be if David Gray was given the job?
Initial impression would be... You go, Greg.
I would probably say underwhelmed, with all due respect to him. I don't think he's at that level yet. He's a coach. He's probably slightly above the level of Tam Courts, who just picks up tunes and balls.
Gets his so, yeah, I, six, though.
Well, technically, we're above them in the league. So yeah, I think he's quite a good coach at the moment. I think it's too early for him, and I'm always very wary of these types of people taking on managers' roles at Hibernian. Never usually ends well. So I would say keep him as a coach at the moment, develop him there. I think he's still got a lot to add to the squad and the club, but yeah, he's not management material yet.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a fair point. I think there's something to be said about how that would potentially infringe on a culture change happening. I think it's something that quite a lot of fans are wanting at the moment. Ewan, is there anything else you think on David Gray?
Yeah, I think, if he came in and won 5 games, I agree with Greg, I don't think it qualifies him for the job. I think Hibs are in a difficult position with David Gray. And I think we could be in a really difficult position with him soon because he's only been retired a year. So he's only been a first team coach for a year, but he's already through two managements in the sense of how long does David Gray kick about Hibs before? I know there's definitely a balance in that tier. So say we appoint X manager now,
right,
and for whatever reason it doesn't work, or the manager, let's say even 18 months time, right, with 2.5 years of coaching on the assumption David Gray stays, does he then sort of slide into that role then? Or is it still too early? Or like if, or in another case scenario, whoever we appoint is having an absolute howler and
not Roy Keane.
In December, we sack another manager because we're sitting second bottom in the league. He's then through 3 management cycles. How, like, you know what I mean? I think that's always the risky thing for me when players, and I want David Gray to be at Hibs until he's 75. I think he should always have a role at the club. But in this capacity, if his ambition is to manage, might he have to leave Hibs and then come back? Because, for example, if you use, say, Keith Lasley at Motherwell, I think since he retired, he'd been on the coaching staff, he was tipped almost every, at least for the first couple. And then obviously when Alexander came in, he went from being assistant manager to like, picking up the cones because Alexander won, and he's now away to St Mirren, I think, to be their CEO. And I'm not saying that could, but I think we could end up in a situation with David Gray where everyone thinks it's inevitable that he will become the manager, and I think it is too early now, but if not now, when?
I think I don't know. I mean, I'd maybe give him the development squad before. I would agree with that. I would give him a managerial role in some capacity. I entirely agree.
Like, you might not like this, but like I said earlier, I'm a bit of a football geek. But I watched that overlap thing you're talking about. Neville done one with Gerrard last week, and he said the best thing he'd done was go to Liverpool and take their 18s. So he could take a team, have a team on his own.
Double boo.
And then make the mistakes away from the camera. Then obviously he took the Rangers job. Like, I think David Gray would be better served. Like Greg's, I think we should, if need be, have a little shuffle and give him the 18s or whatever the plan, even whatever the, I know Steve Keane's kicking about, but whatever the plan is for the sort of development squad, if there's going to be somewhere between the 18s and the development squad, either give them the 18s and move that,
or give them that in between.
Like, I think that would be, for me, it makes more sense. Give him a team that he's in charge of away from the limelight, so that maybe when the next time the Hibs manager's post comes up, which we've seen probably will be in some time to 12 to 18 months, most likely, 2 years at a push, he's at least built up a little bit, you know?
I think,
it helps if that's the natural progression, because he's worked with the players that are looking to come through. You know, so you get a good understanding of the club because you understand the players coming through, you've coached them, you've managed them, and then, like them, you're ready to take that next step. I think that's very valuable. I don't think you can just become a coach in the backroom team, pack up the cones, and then get the full-time manager's job. That's not not natural progression. That
anyway, Harry's been trying to come in for
management
a couple of
minutes. Job. Yeah, but Harry's got nothing valuable to say. So
wow, interesting. And I think a couple minutes is an understatement, because it was about 20. I tried to cut in initially, and now it's at 26. But anyway, I was going to say Jim Goodwin, I think, is quite a good example of that. Kind of went off away from St Mirren and built his managerial profile away from the club that he was like most notorious for playing with. I know he's not really hit the ground running at Aberdeen, but he did do a good enough job at St Mirren to get the Aberdeen job.
I think he's doing a great job at Aberdeen.
I'm a fan of it. I don't think the Aberdeen fans will be.
I know that Ewan wanted him at Hibs, so I'm just glad that we didn't go down that road.
But here's the shout. I say, since we've got the partnerships, and I don't really understand why we've got these types of partnerships, I don't really get why any team does feeder clubs, but let's sack the Stenhouse Muir manager and let's give David Gray the Stenhouse Muir job and see
hey,
who gets on there.
They look like they've just missed out on the League Two playoffs, to be fair.
I see. So, well, let's get them
maybe, I don't know if the expectation for Stenhouse Muir is to be in the playoffs or not, but I think that what's his name on the Terrace TV show, Craig Telfer, he was fairly confident as the season progressed they were going to be in the playoffs. And I had a wee look at the League Two table at the weekend, and I think Edinburgh City have pipped them to the post. I think they're 4 points ahead of them. But then, are we no potential disbanding the Stenhouse Muir one and all our folk are going to Edinburgh City? Is that no idea. Something that's
well,
been...
we've already but got lads, one Edinburgh lads, City. Lads, so he can go and be Teddy yes. Memory's assistant.
Well, anyway, I'd initially said, can you just give me a one-sentence summary? And we've ended up going on about that for about 10
minutes.
Well,
Harry, we're here to speak, mate. It's a podcast.
Aye, but I'm trying to give some form of structure. It's been ripped. So this, for the next group, I was going to try and go for maybe like 7 or 8 managers, but now we're just going to group them together. So,
no, just do it. Okay,
outstanding Scottish managers. So the names I've seen linked realistically.
Outstanding in the sense that we've not spoke about them, not outstanding in their coaching capabilities or career.
If you say you're going to say hi, I will honestly.
I'll say other. Okay, so names that have been touted. I'm not going to give my comment yet. I'll let you guys jump in. I know Greg's going to be angry at a few of them, but let's have fun with it. So, top flight wise, there's Martindale and Mackay.
Why would we employ pesky wabbits?
And then alternately, there's been former Hibs affiliates such as Greg. Do you want to boo now or after I say his name?
I'll let you say his name.
Boo throughout. Fucking boo.
Kevin Thompson.
Boo. Hate him. Hate that idea. Would not be back. Same with Malky Mackay, to be honest, would not be back if he got it. He's an absolute menace to society. So, him and Thompson pointed the two that. I hate the most, not in equal measures, obviously I hate Thompson more, but still, it's pretty close.
I don't think either are, I think Mackay, look, I think we spoke about it last week potentially, but yeah, no. And Thompson, obviously, even if you factor out, let's just pretend that Kevin Thompson's never played for Hibs, never played for Rangers, he's an upcoming young Scottish manager. Winning the league with Celtic Hearts, who have the budget of probably a top-end League One team, winning the league two with them, albeit fair play, he won the league, isn't, for me, enough to get the Hibs job, in my opinion.
Definitely not. It's certainly not at this stage of his career.
I think, did we take Mixu for Cowden Beef? Or had he done something else?
I'm honestly not sure.
I feel like he'd been at Cowden, but again, Cowden Beef were in the Championship at the time. So, like, yeah, Thompson has made it clear that he wants to be a successful manager, and fair enough to him, what his what he deems as success is potentially different from what we deem as success.
Thompson has also nailed his colours to the mast.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. So, like, I think what he sees as the top of the game is different to what we see the top of the game as. But I think before he gets a job in the top flight, like, he's got a step to make. I think had Kelly not went with McInnes, he probably could have got that job. But yes, I don't think Kevin Thompson will be anywhere close to the running for the Hibs job, if I'm honest.
Yep, fair. And the last batch of categories are, I've not really got a name for them. I've forgotten that. I think he's a Danish guy's name.
Miscellaneous.
Name.
I don't know. Has there been a Danish guy linked?
Is he Danish? I've forgotten the guy's name.
We right spoke about him on Thursday, John Dahl. John,
yeah, that's the one.
If I'm honest, Harry,
we're repeating.
I know you weren't on the podcast last week, but like, we're repeating what we did speak about last week because there hasn't been Roy Keane's the first name that's, you know, the press haven't really been running with anything, and I think that's what's going to be tricky over the next few weeks. If nothing comes of this Roy Keane thing, and if I'm honest, I'm not sure it will, but even then, I don't think it'll be anything anytime soon. I think, and for us, especially as people that have that like to fill people's time for circa an hour a week, we might really have to just try and park the manager stuff to be at the risk of not repeating ourselves, because if I'm honest, I probably don't expect a management appointment until... I think we might make an appointment after Dundee away with two league games. I think that would be just before Dundee away that week. Dundee away is the midweek before the St Johnstone last game of the season.
I would agree, but if anything spectacular comes up, I think the club would look at it and look to move quite quickly, I would imagine.
Well, I just want
Roy
to say,
Keane, because that is spectacular.
I asked a question and yous both answered it terribly. But what yous are saying is yous have talked about this and covered it. So we're going to go on to two final questions for the pod. So in essence, Big Ron Gordon, he's come to his senses and he's like, down the slope, you are our new team. We've got one of yous as manager, one of yous as head of recruitment, one of yous as head of training, and then one of yous can either be commercial manager, like CEO, whatever. Ron Gordon's still going to be in charge. Who and down the slope are you putting in each position?
Oh, I'm the manager. There's no even a question about it. I'm the manager. Head of recruitment. I don't know, Harry. You would come up with some shit. I'd probably put you in on head of recruitment. Liam is extremely switched on, so he is CEO. And
head of training.
You can be head of training, Harry, but it's not.
What the fuck's head of training? I'm going...
You'd probably take them to, like, fucking Nando's and Tempin Bowling or something.
Oh, I hate Nando's, mate. Don't worry about that. They'd be on the Mickey D's.
The four roles for me would be Liam, head coach, Greg, assistant, the good cop, bad cop, Greg being the stereotypical little fucking screwball assistant. Harry, I'd put you into commercial, head of commercial or whatever, given your background. Feels like that's a pretty easy fit. And then I'll just do whatever's left over, boys.
So are you putting yourself head of recruitment? Are you taking that role?
No, that's nepotism. I can't put myself in that. No, I'll take head of recruitment. That was the one. That was the role. That was the role you proposed in your hypothetical question. So I'll take that.
Well, if it's for me, I would have myself as manager. I would put you in I'd put you in as what you got. I'd put you in as head of recruitment because I reckon Ewan knows every incoming and outgoing at Hibs for the last 47 years. 48 years from there, he gets a bit fucked. But 47 years.
Is... Too, though.
Greg, why I mentioned the head of training is if I'm not getting on too well with the players or they're not really listening to me, at training, you would put them straight
through. Greg's assistant manager. Greg's assistant manager with a tracksuit on.
So I wouldn't put Greg as assistant manager. So I'd be the manager. He'd be head coach. So we kind of have that dynamic.
Yeah.
Aye. And then Liam.
So I'll do the team talks because I think you're a wee bit weak, Harry.
No. Like, you know, in those games where we're struck, like you're playing football manager, it's like assistant to the team talk. That'd be
Greg.
Not doing well. throws water bottle.
Throws water bottle 20 times.
Liam would definitely be the commercial manager, but what we'd do is because Liam's so handsome, we would change the Hibs badge, and instead of having
even
a harp,
he's
it would
no
just
fucking
be,
here, man.
It would just be Liam's face instead of the harp, and then Hibs would just absolutely blow up as a, what do you call it, club. So yeah, so okay, we've got that sorted. We can get Liam's thoughts on that later on. But one final one. I don't think we give our listeners and our followers on the old socials enough love. So which Hibs fan on Twitter would you allow to be the next manager at Hibs? It can either be a fun one or it can be a stupid one. It's completely your choice, but who are you selecting? If you had to be like, all right, here's a contract, X, who are you going for?
That's tough. Certainly no Dave Graham anyway, because he's been handling a thing. Sorry, Dave.
I still don't feel like I'm that involved in Hibs Twitter, personally. I don't know.
It's probably a toss-up between Fattest Prickus and Leon, to be fair. I think Leon would be a good laugh as manager.
He would be throwing folk under the bus. He'd be doing the Lennon, eh? Nobody would be safe if Leon was manager.
I would say Ryan Melville, but team talks would last for weeks and weeks. He doesn't shut up.
I'm going to say, for me, I would go for Colin for long bangers, because we wouldn't have a left-sided centre-half. Everyone would be playing with right foot, every player in the park would be right-footed, and it wouldn't matter how many times Matt Macy kicked the ball at the park as long as he made all the saves.
I think you've missed out on the true hero that I think would lead Hibs not just to Scottish Cup glory but eventually to Champions League success. Kaiser Sozi.
I was very concerned.
I think he would be the MVP of the club. Is there anybody else we can give quick shout outs to? We're at the stage of the season where we just want to give love to the guys that are actually listening when Hibs are dug meat. So anybody
else? Everyone who listens.
Do you know, that's the thing. Like,
is a gem, to be fair, because I mean, sometimes I don't even listen to us.
Let me
see. For a couple of seconds, get the listen registered and then just shut Spotify down. So anyone that listens is an absolute hero, regardless of what you think of our opinions individually. People think a bit of a wank, but yeah, people listen, so I appreciate it. Much love to you all.
Thank you. Anyone that's helped drive Liam's nuts and agenda and nuts and joke as well has to get a shout out. But no, yous are both spot on. It's been, we don't want to blow our own trumpet, but as we've said before, we just do it because we enjoy chatting shit about Hibs, but we do very much appreciate the folk that also enjoy listening to us and contributing to us chatting shit about Hibs, and it's a nice feeling to know that people generally think we talk a lot of shite, but they quite enjoy it.
Yeah. I think that's a relatively beautiful way to end things, Ewan.
Well,
actually,
we've spoken about the game this weekend, by the way.
I was about to mention, I don't think there's any value in going too much into detail. Nah. But what are your guys' score predictions? Ewan, you never get to kick us off with a score prediction. So what are you thinking?
2-2.
Home or away? Sorry.
Away to Livy, mate.
Away to Livy.
2-2. I think it'll be, I'm hoping it'll be a fairly enjoyable game. In terms of two teams that can maybe play with the handbrake off a little bit. You know, both teams should be feeling good after a win. And I think, obviously, hopefully Hibs edge it, but I think Livy have got a little bit of sun about them, and out of all the teams that missed out on the top six, they can probably feel hardest done to in terms, and especially in the way they chucked it. I think it'll be a tricky wee 2-2.
Greg?
0-0.
I reckon it's going to be yet another classic Hibs game, and we're going to win 1-0, and it's going to be
Melkerson.
It's going to be an overhead kick, is my prediction.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Well, no, look. Hi, thank you very much, lads. Unless we have a week like last week, where we've got emergency podcasts coming to our arsehole, we'll be back next Monday. I think... Just what would be the consensus? Would we like to have a manager appointed by next Monday or not? I'm going to verge on
yes.
Not.
We don't want them in the dugout, like, but we want them appointed. I don't think there's value with this squad at the moment of testing out the waters. So I don't want someone in the dugout, but I want someone appointed.
Yeah, however, what I do would like someone to get to work ASAP, Rocky, because we need it.
Mm-hmm. I won't be worried if we're not appointed by next Monday, but I think I would like to have, like I said, that sort of Aberdeen game as we get into the last week of the season. And do you know what? Drive, maybe get someone announced and get them to the St John's game in the last game of the season. And
I would like to go and burn the new manager's lugs at the play year event. So if they could have someone in by then, that'd be 10 out of 10.
Super.
Aye, let's say we'll be back next week unless anything substantial happens in between now and then, and we'll try and react to it where necessary. But yeah, cheers, boys.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
See ya. Thank you.